Editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Lino Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic continues to increase around the world. As of June 30th, more than 10 million people have been infected globally, and over 500,000 have lost their lives. In Africa, at least 393,000 people have COVID-19, and over 186,000 have recovered. I discussed the outbreak recently with a panel of African experts looking at the impact of COVID-19 and the way forward during a special town hall broadcast on Straight Talk Africa. Take a listen.
Wearing face coverings, physical distancing, and not shaking hands are now part of the new normal due to the global COVID-19 pandemic. The coronavirus is equally affecting health systems and economies in a strenuous and unique way. Hello, I'm Lino Ahmoudou. Welcome to this special edition of Straight Talk Africa. In just 90 days, COVID-19 has infected about 100,000 people across Africa. But it took less than 3 weeks for the number of infections to double. Overall, more than 250,000 have been infected with the virus in Africa, and over 115,000 have recovered, according to the Africa CDC. Worldwide, at least 8 million people have been infected in the past few months. That's according to Johns Hopkins University. Although the full impact of the pandemic may not be known, many observers say the outbreak is overstretching already weak health systems in African countries, and the economic impact of the health crisis is also estimated to be severe. To what extent is the coronavirus pandemic affecting Africa on the socioeconomic front? What will it take for the continent to overcome this crisis moving forward? Today, our experts will help answer these questions. But first, as African countries gradually reopen after weeks of lockdown, governments are looking to revive their sagging economies, which came to a grinding halt due to the restrictions. People are also excited to return to their normal activities. Straight Talk Africa's Paul Ndio has more.
It is likely too early to know the full impact COVID-19 is having on Africa. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued guidelines for governments that opening up their economies too quickly could trigger a fresh wave of coronavirus cases on the continent. But the relatively low numbers of COVID-19 cases reported so far is raising hopes that African countries may be spared the worst of the pandemic. The WHO says the disease appears to be on a different path in Africa than in other continents. And so far, Africa is not experiencing the high mortality seen in other parts of the world.
We also see increasing numbers of cases in Africa, Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and the Middle East. Even in countries that have demonstrated the ability to suppress transmission, countries must stay alert to the possibility of resurgence.
Despite the relatively low death toll, the United Nations Health Agency says that the pandemic poses a major threat to the continent. WHO modeling predicts that if containment measures fail, even with fewer cases requiring hospital treatment than elsewhere, the medical capacity in much of Africa is likely to be overwhelmed.
It's not surprising at all that any country coming out of a so-called lockdown can have clusters of disease, re-emergence of disease in clusters. That's not necessarily a second wave. That is just a result. Many of you as journalists have asked us, there is a careful balance to be struck between keeping everyone at home and continuing to completely suppress transmission of COVID-19.
Violent protests against coronavirus curfews have flared up across major cities in Africa. While schools and businesses in some nations are slowly reopening their doors. Across the continent, the COVID-19 pandemic is strongly impacting the media.
We are covering COVID from, I would say, two angles. So the one aspect is, you know, where you get these statistics from the health experts, you know, from the Minister of Health and others in charge of giving out information. I've seen journalists, you know, focusing on, even if we're fighting COVID-19 this side, let us not forget other key issues that we need to fight, such as, you know, HIV and AIDS. I must say that I think that the Zambian journalists are doing everything they can, you know, to report about COVID-19.
Coronavirus restrictions have made a significant impact on the continent's most prominent economic sectors, agriculture and tourism. It's been even worse for people who depend on their day-to-day jobs. For Tony Senaya, an Accra, Ghana shoe manufacturer, the lockdown has brought zero sales for his business.
We get a lot of sales through social activities like events and parties. Yes, and for a very long period, about 6 weeks, we haven't recorded sales. And simply because people were staying at home, and at that particular moment, nobody needed shoes to go anywhere. But, we have started manufacturing other leather products that are more intimate. So these are personal home items that we've started manufacturing of leather, just to keep the cash flow going until things become normal.
The UN estimates that nearly 30 million people or more could fall into poverty, and the numbers of acutely food insecure people could significantly increase. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Paul, for a great report. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our guests who are all joining us remotely in the interest of physical distancing. Let's start in East Africa, where we have Dr. Ahmed Okwel Umar, Deputy Director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Africa CDC. Dr. Umar joins us from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Now to South Africa with Dr. Karisha Abdul-Karim. Dr. Abdul-Karim is a professor in clinical epidemiology at Columbia University and associate scientific director of CAPRISA, the Center for AIDS Program of Research in South Africa. From the West African country of Burkina Faso, we are joined by Jeremy Zungrana, a public health expert and country director for JPIGO, an international nonprofit health organization affiliated with Johns Hopkins University. And also joining us today from Bethesda, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., is Aaron Bietru, Managing Director for the Center for Financial Markets at the Milken Institute. A warm welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Dr. Zungrana, and I want to have an idea of what all of you think about this pandemic. First, Dr. Zungrana, could you assess the COVID-19 pandemic in Africa, and what do you see as one of the major impacts?
Thank you so much for giving us opportunity to join this call. I think, as you can see in Africa, the prevision was currently that we'll be living in a very catastrophic situation, but likely what we are observing is not exactly that number. We are seeing that even though we are observing in terms of increases of the positive cases, we are seeing a kind of reduction in the lethality rate. That means the number of people dying from COVID is reducing.
Okay.
A kind of control at this level. And if I take the case of Burkina Faso, Ouagadougou, where I am living, so far since May 25th, there is no single death from COVID. And we are seeing a kind of slow increase in terms of new cases.
Absolutely. So, and this is something we see in continental. And we'll go back to find out more. Let me go to Dr. Karisha. Lockdown measures are being relaxed further in South Africa, even though coronavirus cases are on the increase. What do you think? How do you assess the state of the pandemic in the country?
Thanks very much. So we responded, like many other African countries, at a very early stage of the epidemic. In other words, when we had a few cases from travelers and contacts and hospital workers who'd come into contact with them. So it was before we started to see community spread. Now, because we're dealing with a new virus, the virus is going to continue to spread. The national lockdown helped to slow down the spread, gave us some time to prepare the health facilities for the potential cases that we will be seeing as the virus continues to spread. With the easing of the lockdown, we will anticipate to see an increase in cases, and what we will see is the spread of the virus in communities and in settings where we have very low adherence and implementation of the non-pharmaceutical interventions.
Okay.
But for most of Africa, we've not reached the exponential growth phase. We've slowed spread, but we have not stopped the spread of the virus. Thank you.
And that's the critical point there. We'll come back to that. Now to you, Aaron Betrew. The coronavirus health crisis quickly became an economic crisis. What is your assessment of the impact of COVID-19 on African economies?
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for continuing to spotlight the continent on this crisis. I guess the critical thing is in dealing with kind of the economic side of it, we still need to start with the beginning of making sure that there's a bit of a relief on stopping the decline. And there are essentially commercial activities that have been helping on the health front to stop that decline. The launch just recently in terms of the medical supplies platform now was launched that Strife of EconEffing in particular has been spearheading, but essentially using an online platform to accelerate the access to the essential medical supplies, the PPP equipment and the testing strips. And the fact that they are starting to roll out in a regional way is a great start that actually can lay the groundwork for other different things. And that's the second step of this, essentially, how do we restore some of these economies to pre-COVID levels? And you see a number of countries stepping up to try to provide relief when it comes to direct cash transfers in places like in Sudan, but also in terms of propping up lending facilities to help small businesses. But I think the true measure is how do we revitalize these economies, because we want to build back better, if you will,
okay,
because we're starting to see the economies slide, negative to 3%, 6%, and in some places even bigger.
Okay.
But there's going to be a part of this that we need to make sure it gets to the key industries.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about that. Now to you, Dr. Uma. It took 3 months in Africa to reach 100,000 cases of the coronavirus. Now, in less than 20 days, in 19 days, really, the number doubled. So the WHO is sounding the alarm on the increase of cases on the continent. Is there a cause for concern here? What is your take?
Thank you for having me. No doubt that our situation in terms of numbers will get worse before it gets better. And in the natural way that viruses are transmitted in a community, we expect that the numbers will be able to rise quite rapidly after some days. We are probably in the mid-morning of our epidemic, and the peak has not yet reached, so we expect the numbers will go up. Our intention and plan and strategy is to keep the numbers low and the critically ill to minimal numbers so that our health systems can be able to accommodate them. So there is cause for concern, but we have the strategies in place and we are working with our member states to ensure that they are implementing the public health measures that will keep the numbers low.
Professor Karisa, let me toss this question to you. COVID doesn't affect children as much. What do we know about COVID-19 and its effect on children?
So what we know about COVID-19 is that the majority of people who get infected are largely asymptomatic, so about 80%. And then you have a small proportion who present with some mild symptoms and a much smaller proportion who present with severe disease and require hospitalization. And it's absolutely correct. With children, the majority, I would say more than 99%, present asymptomatic or with very mild symptoms. Now, what we see in terms of deaths, both in Africa and outside Africa, is that it tends to be higher amongst people who are older, over 60. But also we're seeing people like in their 30s and 40s, if they have comorbidities or chronic conditions that we see more likely hospital admissions and also more deaths than we've seen in other countries. In Africa, we're typically dealing with a much younger population. About 65% of our population is under 35. But we also have a concomitant epidemic of TB and HIV. So it's going to be very interesting. Other countries that have seen the epidemic peak and seen declines have not had the TB-HIV epidemics that we have. So this combination of non-communicable diseases with our high burden of communicable diseases, it's going to be very interesting to see how things unfold in Africa because of these unique configurations demographically and also in terms of disease burden patterns.
Okay. And Dr. Ogwal, you mentioned earlier measures that the Africa CDC are putting in place. When we look at children going back to school now, when the pandemic is still ongoing, what types of measures are put in place to protect them to ensure that they go back to school safely?
What needs to be done with the opening of schools and children going back to school is physical distancing measures must be put in place. Hand washing facilities must be put in place, as well as appropriate information so that they wear their masks, and those who are even marginally ill will then stay home and not be amongst the school population. So the health system and the surveillance system needs to be up and running and really, really sensitive to any small adjustments in the students' health status so that anyone that may have been exposed is quickly picked out and isolated, and therefore the rest of the student community is protected.
Okay, and as we mentioned earlier, the impact of COVID-19 is undeniable and quite diverse. Here are some of our viewers' comments on the subject. William Yel Akwok in South Sudan writes, "My country is in need of food assistance because 90% of our population is food insecure." Gerson Halukeni Kafine in Namibia says, "We need more testing." And Andrews Asare Noble in Ghana writes, "We need more isolation centers." So, Aaron Betrew, let me come to you. Food insecurity is definitely one of the impacts. Can you speak on what can be done on this front?
No, you're spot on. Essentially, when you have a national lockdown and where supply chains are kind of unraveling across the continent, it becomes almost impossible to get product from farm to market to a person's table in a more commercial sense. And in places where they're definitely more vulnerable, frontier markets, that becomes even more compounded. Yes, there are efforts where international donors are stepping up to provide some of this assistance, but essentially this is a place for local economies to really be leaning in to source as much as possible from the existing agriculture. The last thing that you want to do is worsen the economic crisis by completely removing the local supply chain with an international aid architecture that were it's individuals that are in the rural regions, perhaps less susceptible to contracting this given the distance, end up having a worse economic outcome. And so we need to make sure at the national level and regional level to source as much as possible from local manufacturing.
Okay. And Dr. Zungrana, I would like your reaction on the comment about more isolation centers needed. What can you tell us in terms of addressing this issue?
Of course, I think we mentioned that we need to learn how to live with COVID because this is not something that we are seeing will end soon. So isolating is probably not the most important thing to consider here. We have to observe all the social distancing and other measures that have been recommended. isolation will be applying to those who will be tested positive, of course, until treatment or clearance is done. But I think what we need here is for people first maybe to get more testing and then start applying measures that can prevent them from spreading it at the community level. We also know that when we will get the border open, we will get more cases, and I'm not sure how we are going to manage it. If our health facility currently are able to host such number of people, knowing that all cases are asymptomatic and mild complication, they may be treated from home. And as I mentioned, we may need to learn how to live with the COVID from home.
Okay. Dr. Uma, speaking of testing, which is very important in lowering community transmission and even containing the pandemic as a whole, can you talk to us about what Africa CDC is doing in terms of ensuring that there is enough testing in member countries? Because that has been one of the challenges. How many tests are conducted on average?
In fact, one of our key strategies is to expand testing in Africa. And our initiative for partnerships to accelerate COVID-19 testing has a target of testing 10 million Africans by the end of October. And we are well on that path. We are doing just above 3 million right now. To expand testing properly, we need to make sure that the infrastructure at country level is decentralized from the capital cities into the regional health facilities so that more and more people have access to testing facilities. Secondly, is to make sure that we have test kits available. These have become more and more difficult to find because everywhere in the world, everyone is looking for the test kits. But as Africa CDC, we are doing everything we can to make those available to member states. Third is we must do targeted testing, not to test everyone, not mass testing per se, but it is to target your testing so that every test is counting. That way, we'll be able to get more who are affected, and using the ones that have been testing positive, we can be able to trace their contacts and test those ones as well. So it needs to be very well structured in terms of a strategy so that we test those who need it and not just test everybody. Finally, we released recently guidance on the use of rapid tests. And these we are using for surveillance so that we can be able to have even more targeted testing for PCR in the laboratory. These are some of the things that we are doing as Africa CDC to expand testing in Africa, because that's the only way we'll be able to know our exact burden and therefore prepare immediately.
Okay, fantastic. Now, Professor Karisha, what criteria are being used to determine the peak? We say that Africa has not reached its peak yet. Is there a threshold to determine that? And does it depend from one country to another? Does it differ? Or will we look at it on the continental level?
Yeah, so the peak is not something that's static or predefined. And it really depends on a number of factors. But one of the ways that we look at it is when you start to monitor your cases, and if I may just add one point quickly, that in a lot of countries, testing started and they count when people are being admitted to hospitals. When you start testing at that point, it's starting testing a little bit too late. So if you want to do testing to prevent infections, you have to balance that with active case finding, which means you have to go into the communities and find the cases. And as was mentioned, we have one challenge, which is having enough test kits and enough capacity to test. But what we also have is regions in the continent where we have populations living at very high densities, like slum areas and informal settlements, where things like social distancing within the household and within the community is not quite possible. So that would be an area, for example, where if you have an introduction of the virus, you will have very rapid spread. And we've seen that in South Africa, for example, in the Western Cape province, that accounts for more than 60% of the infections in South Africa, is there are parts of your community that are more vulnerable than others. So once you have an introduction in the community, you have rapid spread.
Okay.
So to go back to your question, it's a point where you start to see some kind of plateauing in the number of infections, and then so that would be your peak where you're not getting more infections, and then after a while you will start to see declines.
Okay, makes sense actually.
So you can imagine like a bell-shaped curve.
Yeah, so it goes like this, of course. Thank you. Now, Aaron Bitru, could you briefly talk about the difference between the short-term and long-term needs that folks should consider really when you look at the impact of COVID-19 on the economic? Briefly, could you explain to us in terms of the challenges and perhaps some solutions?
Sure. And I spoke to this briefly earlier in terms of, you know, on the short-term part, it's if you've got a crisis where we've shut down big swaths of our economy just by virtue of creating this social distancing that it slows down commerce, you have to give people the confidence that their health is going to be protected. So the health relief in stopping the decline, that's just completely job number one. And then on the longer term issues, it's thinking about how to reignite those economies, but making sure that you do it in a way that it's more resilient than when we started this whole crisis. And so I mentioned earlier that, you know, the medical supplies platform, and one of the things that I thought was a brilliant thing was, even though we had a number of countries that were insecure in being able to find the supplies that they needed, there's a plan of making sure to source as much of what is the supplies through local manufacturers, such that the economic benefit of the extra spending that's happening due to medical supplies comes back and is recycled to local African economies. And I would say those type of things are going to be important as we look further, because the trends that we're seeing across the board, it's making sure that we revitalize or maintain as much as possible the foundational elements of African economies, because like the crisis in 2012 and 2015 with Ebola, hopefully there will be an end. There will be an end. And we want to make sure that after coronavirus is dissipated, this crisis, we have a foundation to be able to reignite the economies and be able to have life in various communities.
That was a special edition of Straight Talk Africa on addressing COVID-19 on the continent, recorded on June 19. Next week, we will have part two of the town hall discussion on the impact of COVID-19 and the way forward. For the latest news and coverage on coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks to all of our affiliate stations for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, be safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Hey!
Can you make a one-minute film on your mobile phone? Do you want to try? Join others who are sending in 60-second videos to the Mobile Film Festival Africa. Films can earn cash grants, and there is grand prize of 10,000 euros. Some films will be featured on VOA programs. There is one specific rule. Participants must live on the African continent. The submission deadline is July 7. To find out more and submit your film, visit www.mobilefilmfestival.africa. That is www.mobilefilmfestival.africa. www.